You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of the Fabulous Peltoncast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are thrilled to be joined today to preview the 2019 NFL draft from a Seahawks perspective by our second favorite Zach after Blazers backup center Zach
there
Collins.
There we go.
It is, of course, from 3SigmaAthlete.com and multi-time, extremely popular third Pelton brother, Zach Whitman.
Hey, guys. I'm really excited to be here on this night. You know, this night where we have lots of exciting stuff happening. We have, you know, Game of Thrones. We have the Blazers beating the hated Thunder to go up 3-1. But we are going to talk Seahawks.
We're not here to talk about any of those exciting things. We're here to talk about something.
And also, if none of you could spoil any of those things also.
You taped the Blazers game?
Yeah. Spoiler alert on the Blazers game.
Yeah, get some news. I've been off Twitter for the last 5 hours because of it. Zach, you beat out Blazer legend Zach Randolph in our hierarchy of favorite Zachs. So this is a huge moment.
I mean, honestly, I don't agree with it. Zach Randolph is a hero. And I mean, I'm sure he does seem like the Peltoncast vibe. He might be the listener. And so if you get fan mail after this episode, you know, Zach Randolph being hurt, I wouldn't be 100% shocked. I'm pretty sure he is a Peltoncast listener.
I mean, the real problem is that Zach Randolph played for the Blazers before Tristan became a lifelong Blazers fan.
Right, right.
I'm just shocked that I knew he was ever a Blazer.
I mean, he was pretty notable there. I figured we should start in similar to your most recent appearances, Zach. Can you tell us a little about your NFL draft credentials?
Well, once upon a time, the fan base of the Seattle Seahawks really liked Pete Carroll.
Wow.
This was long Halcyon days of like 2014. No, so when Pete came to Seattle, he was into athleticism in general and kind of combine testing. And so throughout those first several years and really going into 2012, 13, 14, people kind of started to pick up on some trends in that in terms of how they're drafting athleticism. It was kind of based off this Spark metric that he had used at USC. And so in 2014, six drafts ago, which is a million years ago, I did some back calculating and basically was able to kind of figure out what they were, you know, looking at in terms of that score and how they're using it with respect to different position groups and everything. Six drafts later, you know, there's a large catalog of data, and we've been doing this for a while. But basically, the idea is to take all these combine performances and pro days and be able to synthesize that data to give us a better idea of how a given player may perform test-wise. Understanding that while athleticism is not everything, it is an indicator of positive things, and so you take that into account along with various other things at different positions to kind of get a feel for what players are maybe better bets or profiles than others. Of course, you know, it being the Seahawks, that they always tend to select a pretty freak athlete or two, but the fan base has also caught on to that. So it'll be interesting to see this year if they keep following that up, if they really change it up. But it does feel like this is something they look at in with a few other things.
And again, before we even get to this, we'll mention this a lot, but where can we find your work, Zach?
At 3SigmaAthlete.com. I don't maintain it quite as much this year. I've been pretty busy with other things going on, unfortunately, with real life. But all the scores are up there. The final updates have been published for all the pro days, filling out all the data we didn't have at the combine. So pretty much everything is set for the draft on Thursday.
So I guess before we talk about this year's Seahawks draft, curious to look back to last year, which we did at a recap pod at the time.
No, but Zach was not on the recap pod. He was on our preview.
What I meant to say was we did a recap pod. how do you feel like the Seahawks drafted last year with regards to sort of 3 Sigma type athletes?
Well, pause while the man behind the curtain looks at the 2018 draft real quick, just because
Penny.
Let me tell you, I went back and looked at the notes for our 2018 draft preview, which we also did with Zach back then.
Yes.
And Rashad Penny was not one of the players we discussed. There actually was a running back on there, I think, but it wasn't him. So
I believe it was Nick Chubb who of all the running backs I did like last year, and he performed quite well for the Browns. Obviously, though, I'm not in favor of any running back in the first or second round, and so that's a tough thing.
Turns out it wasn't him either. It was actually Darius Geis.
Oh, maybe in a negative sense. Not a big Geis fan. Tristan may have asked about him or something. I'm not going to take that, though, so I'm just going to throw that.
No, it wasn't. These aren't necessarily players that you like. These are just players that get kind of...
No, I see that you're trying to come after me. You're assaulting my credibility.
Zach loved Darius Geis last year.
Yes, so last year, with Rashad Penny in the first round, not an elite athlete at all, a running back in the first, that was tough. They followed up with Rasheem Green in the third, who was kind of a decent enough athlete. They really did go there with the Shaquem Griffin and Trey Flowers picks. Jacob Martin, also a good athlete. And Michael Dixon, of course, first in our hearts. Much like this year, last year, they had such limited draft capital that it's almost tough to evaluate. But you do look at like Will Disley, and he was actually a pretty good tester at tight end, and he's one of the guys they took. So it's frustrating because I look at Will Disley. They took last year. I'm going to rant for a second here just because I have the chance. They took Will Disley last year, and Mr. Anonymous 2 years ago, sandwiched in between that's George Kittle, who was selected in the third day of the draft, and still a tough thing for me to get over, guys. I'm not there yet.
Yeah. And we definitely will not reopen those wounds by talking about multiple Iowa tight ends later in this podcast. My question before we get into the players the Seahawks have been linked to this year, there is not a Three Sigma athlete this year. Do you know who came the closest or whether anyone came close?
Well, there is a Three Sigma athlete this year.
Okay.
I have not written a post about it to do the official induction. But I guess I'll drum roll. The wide receiver, Miles Boykin, out of Notre Dame, did hit Three Sigma, just, I believe, like 2.99. So we're going to round that up and give it to him. He is a 6'4", 220-pound receiver, average age, coming in. He'll be 23 in the fall. So here was his line he put up with a giant 81.5-inch wingspan, 33.5 arms. Ran the 40 in 4.42 with a 4.07 shuttle, a 6.773 cone, and then dropped a 43.5-inch vertical and an 11.8 broad jump, which is pretty much like a Calvin Johnson athletic performance. So projection-wise, he before was kind of in that middle round, third or fourth. It's kind of moved up now to being the second or third. His production is a little middling. But some of the people who do tape study, like Matt Harmon of Yahoo, who does really excellent work with passing or reception perception, really, really likes the way he plays. And so there's discussion of does his lack of production come from the situation, Notre Dame, the quarterback, style of play, or whatever. In general, with wide receivers, I think production is extremely important at the college level. And Boykin's not bad by any means, but it's definitely a big red flag. But he is pretty interesting in that third round range given the upside.
Interesting.
Well, hopefully the Seahawks have a third round pick.
Well, I mean, once they trade Frank Clark for a third, then they'll have one, right?
Oh boy. Well, we'll get to that in a second. So we wanted to go through possible Seahawks targets, players that have been kind of linked to them in a variety of mock drafts. And it seems like they break down by position. There's a few position groups that they look likely to address early in the draft. Also, I threw out offensive line as one of these because the Seahawks are not taking an offensive line.
Yeah, I guess mention your positions, and I'm curious if you agree, Zach, that these are kind of what you see as the biggest needs for the Seahawks, because I think there is a bit of disagreement about them.
All right, wide receivers, tight ends, defensive tackles, defensive ends, and safeties.
I mean, yeah, I don't see issues there really. I think that's pretty on the money.
Yeah, I mean, addressing tight end in the first round might be a little aggressive.
I would be really surprised if they drafted a tight end that high.
But, I mean, this is a pretty highly touted group of tight ends. We'll get to that in a second. Let's start with wideouts, where, three players who have been linked to the Seahawks, a pair of players from Ole Miss, A.J. Brown and D.K. Metcalf, and then from Arizona State, N'Keal Harry. What stands out looking at that group of three players, Zach?
Yeah, so this is an interesting one, I think, in terms of a test case. So just before I start any of this, I think we all agree that it's extremely likely the Seahawks trade down from 21. Yes. And so for me, I think realism-wise, I think in the late 20s is about the earliest they would draft a player. So players that I think will be gone in the mid-first, I'm not really counting on. You know, we really just think they're going to be gone. Like you brought up tight ends. We'll kind of talk about that in a second, but whether those are realistic. So I think that does color the analysis a little bit, just in the sense of not getting our hopes up about guys that are maybe one tier out of reach. With the Ole Miss receivers, it's interesting. With Butler and Brown, this is kind of it's interesting because people who are very anti-analytics or very just anti, you know, anything but grinding tape, you know, and they get into this very, well, DK Metcalf must be every person's favorite player who follows the combine. I don't think that's true, actually. He tested out pretty well, but he's really, really stiff, you know. So, yeah, sure, he's a super great straight-line athlete, incredible athleticism and explosion, but his overall production at Ole Miss was really bad. Had injuries off and on, you know, but the production target share he had just was not there, and is indicative of not of a player who will not be an NFL success. Pretty strongly, I think. It's interesting because AJ Brown is kind of the opposite, where people will look at his testing and say nothing really stood out or was phenomenal, but overall, maybe none of those individual components were tremendous. But the overall net benefit was testing in the 76th percentile, and his production statistics are phenomenal. So between the two, I'm actually a big A.J. Brown fan, and I think that would be a tremendous pick for the Seahawks if they were able to get him in the earlier second round. Whereas I think Metcalf will go early, which is good. You know, someone will take him way before the Seahawks have a chance to take him, which is good because he is possibly the kind of player they could fall in love with. But in general, just not the kind of player that I think you'd really want to be targeting. Receivers especially, you want to find players who are drawing targets at the college level. And if you are not good enough to draw targets at the college level, it's just there isn't that much precedence for you then doing a good job at the pro level.
And that's definitely the case with Brown and Harry, who were fourth and fifth in terms of receptions over the last two seasons combined in FBS, Brown in fourth, Harry in fifth. And it's funny that they also end up pretty much identical in terms of spark score, it looks like.
Yeah, there are things to consider between the two. One of the things about Harry is he's a little bit younger, but both are around that 22 this fall, which is really nice in that range. Harry's a little taller, but both of those guys are in that range that I think is really undervalued sometimes, where they were good testers, solid production. There's no real holes. I think Brown might be a slightly cleaner projection for the Seahawks in that he fits the mold maybe of a player they could do more with, whereas the Seahawks have not had as much exposure to big receivers or utilized them maybe as well since the days of Sidney Rice. But I would be really happy really with either of them. I think this receiver class is interesting because it actually does align well with what the Seahawks have, in that Seahawks are going to be trading down and probably taking something in the early, middle, second. And this is a class with maybe 8 or 10 receivers who could go in the first three rounds, but no one really, I think, who's deserving of a high first-round pick or even a middle first-round pick. My maybe hot take is that if the Seahawks are able to finagle more draft picks, you know, via trades and trade downs and everything, I wouldn't mind taking a receiver in the second and third round or something in that range, just because I think the team roster-wise is so thin there. It's such an important position. And taking one player, you really do risk that coin flip going the wrong way and not having a backup plan for when Doug's gone in a year or two. So I personally think that the need is so great and the players are kind of available in the right area that I'd be fine taking a few of these guys.
Interesting.
And that totally makes sense to me. It's a lot of capital to invest in a draft where they don't have very much capital. And I think it's kind of funny that we're talking about this just under the assumption. We don't even need to talk about this. The Seahawks are going to trade down from this pick.
I don't think it's 100%, but it's like 85 to 90.
It is so exceedingly likely that we don't even need to discuss it as a should they, basically.
Well, also we just agree they should.
Yes. But they will end up with more draft picks, and they will be making their first pick at the very end of the first round or early in the second round. But you look at it, and it's basically like position-wise, the ones that we're talking about, you know, tight end, they drafted somebody last year. Defensive end, they drafted somebody last year. Safety, they're a little bit more in need. But on the D-line, it's sort of like defensive tackles. It's like, A, you find those when they're old, and B, they drafted those recently. Wide receivers, as far as good young, I want to say... credentialed wide receivers who weren't undrafted free agents, there's nobody, right? The cupboard's bare for the Seahawks. And I think that this could be the type of season, like you're saying, Zach, where they go out and get a couple of players to really try to boost that room, especially with a lot of uncertainty around Doug Baldwin.
Yeah, and I think something that I looked into maybe a number of years ago now is kind of what positions are available on day three and actually have a track record of success. And, you know, like, For example, interior defensive linemen, tackles are actually pretty successful in the fourth or fifth rounds. You find your Geno Atkins or your Grady Jarrett or whatever. Teams undervalue those players. So in general, I'm not tending to draft a defensive tackle high. I think where you'd really come down to is the edge class is pretty deep.
Right.
And so probably the ideal team fit to get out of the second and third round, if you are able to finagle a pick in both rounds, would be to take an end and a receiver, hopefully both from that, you know, pretty solid tier, because there is depth at those positions. But I certainly don't think that an interior defensive lineman, just given the way the class lands this year, is really in the Seahawks' sweet spot.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll get to that. Find somebody cheap at the end of free agency.
Yeah, I mean, because that's a position where it's easy to bring in veterans and have them be successful. As you said, bringing in wide receivers from other teams, much more hit or miss proposition, I would say.
Right. And well, and if you hit a second round pick on a receiver, the surplus value you get on that rookie contract is absolutely massive.
Yep.
And so that's honestly why, even if there's a team fit issue, I'm fine plugging more resources into positions where you can get that insane surplus value, even if it doesn't make sense from a team balance standpoint, because you're giving yourselves more chance to hit that lottery. Hey, and given that you've invested...
Sorry.
Go ahead.
How's the surplus value on drafting a running back in the first round?
I just tried it in Excel and I got the division by zero thing. So I'm not sure.
Are there any other receivers outside of these three that you like for the Seahawks in sort of that first, second, third round territory?
I mean, I think Boykin is interesting, just given that there are a lot of people who I respect who think he has really good ability outside of the testing. And he has that kind of elite testing. And he's 6'4", 220,
right,
you know, running a 4.4 flat. And that is the kind of frame where if you think he has a route running ability, that it's pretty interesting. One that I think is maybe over talked about among people, the amateurs, you know, we all look at the draft. But Andy Isabella from UMass, he was one of those guys, I think he's like 5'9", 190, tested out kind of as a league average athlete, but just tremendous production at UMass. And, you know, draft Twitter has him going really high, you know, second round or something. But it's one of those ones where I think probably people have fallen in love a little too much. And the actual NFL people and some of the people who are NFL linked to write for, you know, NFL.com or whatever are pretty negative on him. But that's a guy where almost like a Doug Baldwin frame, has that elite production. And if you're talking about, I think it could go in like the fourth round. And I would be totally willing to take a, you know, gamble on a potential slot receiver in the fourth round because those picks just aren't worth that much.
Yeah.
And with receivers, given how strong the correlation is of production in college, you know, projecting forward, I think that would be a really interesting bargain buy choice.
I'm excited because looking up has revealed to me the player below him in terms of spark is a wide receiver from Pitt named Rafael Araujo Lopez. And the fact that there is another athlete named Rafael Araujo, a journeyman center in the mid-2000s.
You're going to want him to go in the first round.
Oh, yeah,
also.
I'm in on him.
Loved Rafael Araujo.
You know, that the suspension for PEDs was unfair.
take it to the grave.
Tremendous.
Oh boy. Okay, let's move on to talking about the tight end class, which is intriguing because it is led by a pair of players from the same school. Iowa tight ends following in the footsteps of George Kittle, Noah Fant, and TJ Hawkinson. And then the other player I had listed, you know, maybe a little bit lower on the boards, but maybe in the Seahawks range is Irv Smith Jr. from Alabama.
Yeah, I mean, Iowa produces a few things very efficiently. Ethanol, a number of U.S. senators that far exceeds the per capita population.
Caucuses
and tight ends. Yeah, I mean, it's. I think in this case, I expect Hockenson to go pretty early. So just to give some context, George Kittle 2 years ago in a really deep tight end class with, you know, I think it was like something like eight tight ends who went in the first three or four rounds. Of course, the Seahawks, again, to reiterate, did not pick a tight end from that class. They picked a tight end from the class before and after. Both of those players drafted significantly earlier than George Kittle, but you know, I digress. Both of the players this year, Noah Fant and TJ Hockenson, both are young. Fant won't even turn 22 until midseason, and Hockenson's not 22 yet. Hockenson tested out in the 85th percentile and in the 98th. Hockenson's more a traditional tight end who can kind of do everything. He's really awesome, and Fant maybe is more of an Evan Ingram type, a little bigger than that, but maybe more of a receiver, a joker type tight end. I expect Hockenson to go middle first at worst. And I would think Fant's going in that Ingram range in the early 20s. And given that we don't expect the Seahawks to be picking in that range, I don't think either happen. And I think probably the receiver class just falls better in that there are a few elite players, but kind of a pretty good middle range. Whereas the tight ends, there's these few top elite guys, but those don't line up where the Seahawks are going to be picking. As far as Herb Smith, he's Alabama and that matters, but testing wise, really just not there. And I think tight end is one of the positions where testing is most clearly correlates. I did this a few years ago for Max Williams when he was coming out of Minnesota, but there is almost no history of unathletic tight ends being drafted high. I was really anti-Max Williams at the time because people were talking about him going in like the top 20. I think he went in the late second, and I would expect Herb Smith to fall in that range just on the basis of the testing being so poor at a position where being explosive is pretty vital.
Makes sense. So, yeah, then maybe not a position the Seahawks look to address.
Everything that I know about Max Williams is the amount of X's in his first name.
I hate to look up, because I'm not sure if Max Williams has been good or not.
Yeah, I have no idea if he's been a good player or bad player.
The answer is no. All right, let's move on then to defensive tackle. The next spot on our list, one of the most polarizing, let's say, prospects in this year's class is Jeffrey Simmons from Mississippi State, who suffered a torn ACL while working out ahead of the draft in February. He already was going to be unable to attend the combine, having pleaded no contest after a 2016 arrest on charge of simple assault, stemming from a video showing him punching a woman before entering college. Would Simmons be someone that would make sense if they were willing to take that to go that direction?
He has a questionable past, both in the injury history and the fact that there's video of him punching a woman. And the Seahawks have shown especially a desire, I think, in recent drafts to have players whose draft stock has been compromised due to injury or possible off-field questions. Think Malik McDowell, I guess, is kind of the operative there. Not that that at all was predictive or whatever issues, but he was underdrafted due to, I guess, immaturity issues. It's interesting because he really does fit that. I mean, he's humongous, his wingspan and frame, and everyone says he's crazy athletic. Obviously, didn't test because the torn ACL. And so I could see the Seahawks wanting him to be that, three tech, five tech hybrid player that can roll all around the front. But it's a really tough evaluation for me. I think in the end, that is not a player I'd want to spend their first pick on, given that I think defensive tackle is just not the biggest need necessarily. And with him, I mean, personally, I like to see them not draft him given the history. And I don't think that really just syncs up with the fact that he is a pretty huge gamble, isn't ready to contribute right away. And I think there are bigger needs available on the team that they'd like to address first.
I think it's also harder to take a gamble in terms of health, setting aside the character, the conduct issues, in a year where you only start out with four draft picks. Like if it's a year like next year, 2020 seems set up to be where the Seahawks are going to have multiple chances, it becomes a lot easier if one of those players isn't going to play immediately.
Yeah, and it shouldn't matter, but given the McDowell thing, I feel like if they took another red flagged defensive tackle on the early second, that I think there will actually be some some possible inertia to make that selection. Right. Just given that, even though logically that shouldn't play into it, it would be surprising us to see them do the exact same thing again.
All right, so the other defensive tackle that sort of seems to be in this range would maybe make sense for the Seahawks is Christian Wilkins from Clemson.
I gotta say, I think he's going to go a little higher, so I don't think he'll really fall into that range. I loved watching him at Clemson. Really good player. Tested out at average, which is totally fine for defensive tackle, right in that league average, 44th percentile or whatever. But I think the Seahawks have probably spent enough at the interior line, so I'd be a little disappointed to see them go there. I think with Wilkins, he'll probably just be gone early enough that it won't matter anyway, though.
Makes sense.
I mean, honestly, if we're talking defensive linemen, I would probably be trying to go in that fourth or fifth round range where kind of there tend to be some players just historically that fall there just because of being undersized or whatever. It's like just looking at, I don't know, just look at the chart right now, for example, kind of scrolling down and trying to find someone, league average or above athletically, who's undersized, played at a major conference, kind of often some of the things the Seahawks could look for there. One would be like Cortez Broughton out of Cincinnati, who kind of fits into that range. I think that might be the better bet. And I mean, I would be doing this every year basically, but I think picking defensive linemen in that early third day, there really just are players who kind of turn out being pretty good just because teams don't value interior linemen. So I'd love to see the Seahawks take that approach and less of the, taking a defensive tackle in the second and third round as they've done the last few years.
Or sometimes even undrafted, as in the case of Puna Ford.
Right.
All right, let's move on to edge, where there's several potential Seahawks picks, you would say. The list that I have, LJ Collier from TCU, Clelin Ferrell from Clemson, Rashawn Gary from Michigan, and Montez Sweat from Mississippi State.
Yeah, so it's interesting. I think Sweat is going to go pretty early in the end. I looked it up earlier, just like the list of edge athletes who have tested like him, and edge is one of those positions, again, where people just tend to go based on testing pretty strongly. It has a high correlation to success. It probably the biggest freaks in the NFL play it at edge, if I had to guess. I mean, the list was insane. It was like the first five were Manny Lawson, Javon Kearse, Clowney, Ansa, and like Hunter. Danielle Hunter. It's just the list of, there's not that many players there, and almost all of them go first round. So I would expect to see him go first round. The issue there is that everyone kind of wants him to be Danielle Hunter, but he is older. One of the things that Danielle Hunter, the reason he was so raw and not productive at LSU is because he was super young. I don't think he turned 21 until after he was drafted, where Sweat's going to be 23 this fall. So tougher there, and maybe not my favorite prospect. The guy I do like, because I think Ferrell will go in the middle at late first. I think Collier's not quite the type I'd want. I think Gary's interesting in that Rashawn Gary out of Michigan, interesting edge. He had production issues at Michigan in playing for Harbaugh, but tested out really, really well in the 95th percentile. He's only 21 just now. He's rangy, 6'4", 276, 82-inch wingspan, just kind of all the tools, and was an elite prospect coming out of high school. I think if they were going to spend a pick kind of on a real hope that someone could pan out, Gary would be that guy. A little similar to Clark, although I think Clark, to me, had much better tape at Michigan, but fell because of off-field issues, whereas Gary, really, it's an inconsistency on tape, and can he turn the potential in? But if you're going to take a risk, I think getting a guy who was projected to go much earlier a few years ago in the late first would be pretty interesting, and I'd be pretty excited about it. I think the others, though, I mean, it's a really deep class, and so to some extent, just hard to predict where they're all going to fall, because a few teams will prefer, one edge or the other, and that will set who ends up falling down the late first, early second. But I do expect there to be players in that range, just because there is a depth of talent where there are so many edges that could fall there.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about kind of that clump of players that we're discussing here, and then there's also the sort of like elite edge rushers in Nick Bosa and Josh Allen, who will be top 10 picks. You're talking about what could be 8 to 10 edge rushers in the first round.
Right. I never think it'll end up being that many just because there's a certain saturation. And what happens is more like the 2014 wide receiver class where really good players end up falling to the second round, I think, more. But I do think there will be a lot of edges going early, and there will be players in the late first, early second. It'll be really good value.
We do have a statistical perspective on the edges from Football Outsiders' Sackseer projections, which were on ESPN Plus. And, you know, it's interesting. So of these guys, Sweat has the best projection, number three overall. But Gary is number five, despite having only 3.5 sacks last season and 9 over the previous 2 years, as compared to 22.5 for Sweat and 21 for Clelin Ferrell, who comes in seventh on that list. So that seems to be an indication that, you know, some of the other factors that go into it, passes defensed, turns out to be a pretty good predictor of NFL success. Some of the combine numbers are also in there. Seem to be looking pretty good for Rashawn Gary. And also their takeaway was, similarly, you know, the depth of this class. Nobody has an elite projection, even, you know, the guys who, Bosa and Allen, but who are likely to go high in the draft, but a number of players with solid projections.
Yeah, very similar, I think, to the receivers in that regard, both of which really fall well for the Seahawks. It's a good thing the Seahawks have their full set of draft picks because this class does kind of fall, you know, perfect for them.
Well, here's where we should probably talk about the possibility that they add a another draft pick but have greater need for an edge rusher with a Frank Clark trade.
So operating under the assumption, I suppose, well, I guess there's sort of two questions here. The first question of, if the Seahawks were offered a first-round pick for Frank Clark, plus maybe some other stuff behind that, but sort of the central part of the trade being a first-round pick in this year's draft, do you think that is a good trade to make?
Yeah, personally, I don't think they'd have to get a first, even.
Which is the report from ESPN's Adam Schefter over the weekend, is that, you know, they're having trade talks that, you know, their demand is that any trade before the draft include a first.
Yeah, my thing with all these is always so binary between first and second round picks, right?
Right.
But, I mean, like, there's a second round pick that's like 35 and there's a first round pick that's 32.
Right.
Not like worlds apart difference. So I've internally, my expectations have been somewhere around 38 maybe, might be the pick that I'd actually get for them. It's pretty hard for me to believe they could actually get a first round pick, but I'd be happy with anything in that range. He's not... It sounds like he's going to make, you know, 20 or 21 million or whatever per year. And it's very hard to imagine him producing a lot of surplus value over that. And if you're given the choice to take a swing on something else, let someone else pay him and move on. It's not a fun move necessarily, but I do think it is the right move. And we can debate, I guess, whether you think the rookie pay structure working this way and biasing results so much toward trading good players for picks and breaking up team continuity is good, but I do think that this is just a result of how the system is set up.
Well, the important thing is whatever we say doesn't matter because it is not taken into account. You look at the top of the second round and, you know, a couple of teams that have been thrown out as possible destinations, the Colts and then the Raiders, who of course are in need of pass rush after trading Khalil Mack last year. Both of those teams have picks late in the first round, back-to-back at 26 and 27, and then also at the top of the second round, 34 and 35. So, you know, maybe some willingness because of that, you know, their accumulation of picks to give one of those up for Clark.
I think about the Raiders pick a lot. I think that's the one really that would be... I think that seems to be the most obvious first-round pick you could get. Not that I know, but... It does seem like maybe that's one where the team traded away an edge last year. They have a lot of picks. They're willing to go pay someone. I would be thrilled, honestly, to get either their first or their early second round pick just because, again, I think you either trade them now or you don't trade them at all. You can't let them go for free. So I really think that value sets in and early second is good enough.
Interesting. I mean, it is such a complicated conversation because, again, we talked about this basically – with regards to the salary cap. Like, do the Seahawks value Frank Clark? Of course they do. Do they think that Frank Clark is a game-changing defensive player? Of course they do. They want Frank Clark to be on the team. But the way that you have to look at this is Frank Clark at $20 million plus per year versus whatever this draft pick is, let's say that they do draft two edge rushers in the first two rounds. They trade Frank Clark, draft two edge rushers relatively early. Can those two players come near the same type of productivity and be under team control for 4 years at a much lower number, where it's like it almost forces you, if you have an asset like Frank Clark that's not, it's not a Russell Wilson-like asset where it's a once-in-a-lifetime type quarterback. There are other right. Frank Clarks who will happen. Right.
Yeah, and Frank Clark is not Von Miller. I mean, Frank Clark hasn't. I mean, not that Pro Bowls are indicative necessarily, because the process, I believe he's made a Pro Bowl. I think it'd be hard to rank him in the top five edges in the league, just given how many great edge rushers there are. And it is difficult for me to imagine paying a defensive player who is not really transcendent, like $21 million a year. So I just think in general, the way the market is it's just so conducive to trading for a pick. And I really am rooting in that direction.
I mean, I think the other good way to think about it, it's easy to be biased by the endowment effect. And, you know, the idea that Frank Clark is on the roster, he's so valuable, can't bear to give him up. It's useful to think, well, if the Seahawks were in the other side of this equation and they were the team trading a late first or early second round pick for Frank Clark,
let's say
how would we feel about that? Given
that
how
Frank
we felt
Clark was named Sheldon Richardson.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we have at least an example of this. Like, we've seen that it's a risky move at best.
Well, I mean, there's no way you would trade for a player with a late first, early second without, you know, figuring out how to sign them up for the long term. You would never like let them leave to a conference rival or anything the year after.
Especially not for a really cheap deal. No, definitely
right.
Would not do that.
You couldn't imagine it happening in the range of 1 year, $8 million. That would be very hard.
Oh my god. But I mean, really, this is a shockingly similar situation. Frank Clark is younger than Sheldon Richardson was, probably more productive, at least in the kind of most recent season that we have available. But I think we all agree that the Seahawks overpaid at the time for somebody like Sheldon Richardson.
Especially since Jermaine Kearse was in the trade.
Oh, that's what I was talking about. Yeah. This pick, we don't know who that is. We know that Jermaine Kearse scores touchdowns in Super Bowls.
And we know that he plays well only in odd-numbered years.
If, Zach, they were to make a trade for, say, the 24th or 27th pick with the Raiders, who do you think is the player that they could look to try to get somewhere who could be available and to try to get somewhere near the amount of production that Frank Clark is providing sort of this and next season?
Well, it's interesting. I think that it's dangerous to pick players based on immediacy, just because players you think are safe aren't safe, and the players that you think aren't safe are. I mean, Danielle Hunter was one of the rawest edges to come out ever, it seemed like, at the time, in that range of the draft, and he was productive by his second season. So I think I wouldn't really say that a player needed to be productive next year. I would pick Rashawn Gary, I guess, in that range that they were able to get there. I think the safest pick in terms of someone who could produce early would probably be like A.J. Brown, just giving Russell a receiver, because we have a very good quarterback. I believe A.J. Brown is a very good, productive receiver, and I think he'd have a pretty good settlement period with Wilson, and that would produce real value for the Seahawks next year. But I think it's a little bit of a trap to think about draft picks in terms of needing to produce immediately, because that can lead you to picking the wrong player for the wrong reasons. I think you have to kind of make the draft pick independent of the trade that came before it. And I think that means picking the player you think is the best value, even if they are a little more of a risky choice. Now, of course, that backfired Malik McDowell, as we know, taking the more risky player. But I think it is the right thing to do.
Well, and I mean, what you're talking about is basically, we've talked about this extensively, where it's like the Seahawks just being reactionary to what the most recent thing that happened was, where it's like they drafted Rashad Penny. They used a first-round pick on a backup running back because they were upset with how the running back room looked the year before. And they did this reactionary thing for something that, like, you know, like if they were to float the idea of Rashad Penny for a first round pick, best pick they're getting for Rashad Penny is a sixth round pick or something at this point.
Do better than that. Fortunately, this year they're able to react to all the mistakes they made in the 2018 offseason. And so that now they're getting comp picks and they're no longer trading higher end picks for players. So, and maybe trading.
Then maybe that's right, swinging right? back as trading Frank Clark to get draft picks. Now exactly. they're on the other side.
Yeah, yeah.
We're the new Jets.
wait, I wanted to ask. So let's say that no Clark trade happens. Seahawks trade down a bit, go wide receiver with their first pick, and then maybe look to address edge in the third round range. Is there anyone that stands out that could go around there that you particularly like?
It's tough because I think in that range there isn't a tremendous history of edge players being all that good in that range, so it's a little scary, I guess. Certainly it's not baked. You don't look at it and say, well, there are no good third round edges. It's worrisome. I mean, I think if you're trying to swing for the fences, ironically, with our previous conversation, there's another Max with two X's.
Yes, I see this player near the top of the...
out of Eastern Michigan, who is in that third round range. There's a few things I like about him. One, I'm in favor of players in general who test out well and are productive in college, but maybe have lower draft stock because of the school they went to with just a lesser pedigree. And so that's interesting. Now that I've said that, he's probably like 27 years old or something, you know, and like a chain smoking and doesn't really... isn't going to pan out, but
they would make it hard at the combine,
right? And he excelled, so I don't know, maybe it works out. But I think you're probably trying to shoot the moon at that point, and there isn't necessarily a tremendous amount of success of edge players when you get down there. Teams are often efficient. Now, that's not to say there aren't any. I believe Jared Allen was a third round pick way back, and there have been others. You know, obviously Frank Clark doesn't really quite count in the late second, because he really has a top 20, top 15 talent who obviously had the very serious off-field issues that dropped him down.
All right, let's move to the last position group I have, which I've listed as safeties, although some of these players are sort of combo nickel corner slash safeties and could potentially fill a couple of different needs for the Seahawks with Justin Coleman's departure. So we have from Delaware, Nasir Adderley, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson from Florida, and Darnell Savage from Maryland.
Yeah, so Nasir Adderley is fascinating because he's from Delaware, and he's getting like late first-round buzz, which is great. I mean, go get it. You know, I love seeing an FCS guy go that early. It's a little surprising, I guess. I think maybe a guy that you'd like to see in the early second if you were to drop there. In general, given the strength of wide receiver and defensive end class in that range, I think I'd prefer to see them go there. But if Adderley did last, I think he'll go maybe in the late first area. But if he was available in the early second, he's interesting. I think safeties are pretty hard to evaluate. The NFL isn't necessarily all that good at evaluating them. You know, some of the best ones come in later rounds, like what's his name from Alabama who plays for Chicago now? And this is not a position in the past that I've felt very confident about projecting. I will say that this class has a large number of athletes in general, which does point to, and several of many of whom were actually at the combine, which does point to a certain depth of performers there. There are certain years where a position will have just almost no good athletes at it, and that is indicative of a weak class. Not that athleticism correlates directly to performance, but having a class that's really weak athletically overall just tends to point to pretty few players going in the early rounds. In terms of Savage and Gardner-Johnson, they're also fine. Those are, you know, players also on that first, second round bubble and whatever. I mean, I'm not sure by putting safety on the list if you're implying that you don't want the King and Pelton Cast favorite Tedrick Thompson to be playing. And so I'm a little bit just, I guess, confused overall given his prominence.
Well, the other thing we're missing here is, of course, our favorite safety in the class, because we're going to talk about him in a second here. But that's a separate issue altogether.
Can we talk about him?
Let's get into the UW prospects.
Well, then, talking about sort of what the Seahawks would do, focusing primarily on sort of their, let's call that a second round pick. Their second round pick. I'm just saying, without owning a pick, kind of the first type of pick that the Seahawks will have in the draft. Is there anybody who we missed from sort of that group of players that we discussed that you think would be a realistic possibility?
No, I mean, I think, and again, this gets into, I guess, my preferences. What I'm really focusing on is wide receiver, tight end if one were to follow, you know, way more than they should, or an edge player. I think that's where the strength of the class is, and you should be picking from the strength of the class where you can. Those are also premium positions in the sense that if you're using a tight end or a receiving player, you can be pretty valuable. So if Hockenson or Fant were to fall, you know, that would be really interesting. I think Brown, Harry, I don't think we've talked about Hakeem Butler yet.
No.
And really a fascinatingly just no one can seem to agree on him. It's really, really quite polarizing. So just athletically, you know, tested pretty well, 80th percentile or so. I think he's 6'6". He had a really good last year production at Oklahoma State after a few years of more middling production behind another receiver. I forget the name, who was drafted last year. And, you know, Matt Waldman, who's a, you know, a Twitter evaluator, I guess he's been doing this a long, long time and has some interesting opinions, thinks he's one of the best receiver evaluations he's ever seen. But there are NFL players who think he's, you know, the 12th best receiver, or their NFL scouts say he's the 12th best receiver. I mean, to me, I think he's really interesting because he does kind of hit the boxes in that he's, you know, not significantly overaged. He has a huge frame. He's athletic. He's productive. There's a lot of people who do like his tape. So sitting back for me, it's Friday. It's the early second round. I'm really hoping to see A.J. Brown, N'Keal Harry, Hakeem Butler, Rashawn Gary, or if one of the tight ends falls. I think that is the little group. Now, having said that, of course, the Seahawks are going to do something completely different and draft like an off-ball linebacker, and it's going to be completely befuddling. But I really am in that wide receiver edge mindset.
You know, they're going to have the best linebacking core they've ever had once they draft this player. All right, with that, let's talk about the UW prospects, starting with Byron Murphy.
Well, I mean, I think we all love Byron Murphy. I certainly do.
Of course.
He had a notable play in the Pac-12 title game. Not sure if anyone remembers that against, I can't remember what team, Utah? That was pretty exciting. But
it,
Byron
was
Murphy
one of the
had,
schools.
He didn't have the best combine necessarily, but then he kind of came back and really followed it up with a pro day where he kind of cemented some of his weaknesses. And he came in as a league average corner. He did test out pretty small, in that his arms are 30 inches long, only a 71-inch wingspan, which is incredibly short. I mean, there's very few drafted corners with a wingspan that short over the last, like, 10 years. It's pretty irregular to have that small of a frame. But I think he has obviously phenomenal ball skills. I'm pretty excited about him. And I don't think – I think he tested well enough that people will take him. It does feel like size-wise he's probably more in that slot corner role, for teams evaluation-wise, even if he ends up being able to be, you know, a Brent Grimes type who can play outside even at a smaller stature.
How important is athleticism at corner?
I this is interesting because I think people view this in different ways. It is important. I don't think it is the level of importance as edge or tight end, which are probably the premier positions. But there are very few good corners who are bad athletes. Now, him being a league average athlete, I think that's not a negative indicator at all. I think his wingspan, though, and his frame being so small, that does put him a little behind the curve in terms of what players are really successful. And what I try to do is I try to look back. You know, we have 20 years of data roughly now, and how many players were successful not clearing certain benchmarks, you know? And I don't think athletically he's below the benchmarks anywhere. I do think that frame-wise he's small, but he has the really strong ball skills and everything to make up for it. So I am a pro Byron Murphy person. I do not think that this, in terms of measurements and athleticism, he's helped himself at all. And he hasn't shot up maybe in the way that I thought he would. As a UW homer, obviously I was a huge fan and thought that he might be, you know, more in that first half of the second round, kind of, or first half of the first round, I should say. Whereas really it seems like he's probably more in that late first round range.
Right. All right. Well, speaking of benchmarks and their importance, Taylor Rapp, after running a 4.7 plus 40 at this UW Pro Day, what do we think that says about his NFL prospects?
It's interesting. He's probably one of the more unique players that we've seen. I think I would view it in a few different ways. I'd say number one, his overall athletic profile, stunningly, is still, you know, on the NFL spectrum. He's, I think, like 30 or 35th percentile, somewhere in there. Nothing, honestly, that's a huge red flag. And it really comes down to purely what does the 40 mean. Now, his 10-yard split was only a 1.61, which isn't all that bad. I mean, just for comparison, Myles Gaskin had a 1.58. So I don't think his 10-yard split was crazy. It seems like he doesn't have a huge top speed. But his short shuttle was 3.99, his 3-cone was 6.82, and his 10-yard split wasn't bad either. So it's almost like he can kind of move in short spaces really well, but just doesn't have that ability to accelerate to a longer stride. It actually, part of it, not that I have any expertise in this at all, completely out of range, so I am just completely talking out of my ass, but it does make you wonder if this is a thing that could be improved with technique, in the sense that he doesn't have long speed, but he seems to have the functional movement skills in short areas. And so I'm not qualified enough to know if it really is a technique issue running or if he's just slow for some reason and doesn't have anything beyond 20 yards. I will say that I fall probably more on the pro Taylor Rapp side. I don't think the one bad 40 is a death knell given how good the agility drills are and everything else in his 10-yard split. I mean, his 10-yard split is... Again, it's just so close to a lot of the other guys, just not that bad, that I just wonder maybe if the with better technique or whatever his 40-yard could be a little better, not that I'm qualified to talk about that. But I tend to be pro Taylor Rapp, even though I was disappointed, because I did expect him to test better. You certainly don't see it. You see the quick movement skills that are shown in his agility drills. And so I have to wonder. That number just seems weirdly low, but is probably correct given that he didn't want to run at the combine. He ran at the pro day, and people who were there at the junior day last year say that they had him, you know, in the 4.7 range.
It is weird because I feel like watching these players in person, it's like, at no point did I say to myself, Taylor Rapp's not athletic enough to be out there. Granted, this is college, not the NFL or whatever. Like, oh, Taylor Rapp didn't make that play because he was too slow, right?
Well, I mean, I think part of that at safety in particular is that you can play faster or slower than your actual speed based on your pattern recognition and ability to, you know, read and diagnose plays quickly.
Yeah, and again, his short area movement skills are super elite, and his change of direction skills are elite, and so maybe he just inherently makes up for the fact that he's slower off the take in terms of long speed by being so quick off the take and being able to get there. Because I would say the thing that really pops most at him just watching for 3 years is his instincts are amazing, right?
Right.
I mean, he ends up in the right place in a hurry. That is one of the ones I'm most and just I think puzzled by, just because he does seem so sudden when he's actually playing.
Would you like the Seahawks to draft Taylor Rapp?
Where?
Early second, I guess. I don't know.
I don't know. I think as much as I love Taylor Rapp, so I think the answer is yes, because I'll talk myself into it.
Yes.
I think a safety for me in the early second is pretty rich.
Right.
I did just run a quick little search here. So I looked over the last 20 years for safeties drafted in the first or second round with a 40 that's over a 4.6. And we have four. You have Jonathan Cyprian, who was drafted, I believe, by Jacksonville a few years ago, who's kind of a flame out. You have Keanu Neal, who is a good player for Atlanta, and around the similar size frame as Rapp. And then DJ Swearinger and Tony Dixon. Tony Dixon was some safety at Alabama in 2001 I've never heard of. But DJ Swearinger, obviously, I think we're all familiar with. Excellent headshots. So it just, I think, does point to the fact that this is a highly unusual situation. Usually players who go early are faster. So if Rapp does go in the early second, he will be one of the, he'll be the slowest by far of those players. No safety less than a 4.64 has been drafted in the first two rounds in the era of combine data.
Interesting. All right. The other potential day two pick for the Huskies, tackle Caleb McGarry.
Caleb McGarry tested out great. He is overaged. I think he's going to be 24 sometime in the late summer. But yeah, really, really good projection. And it just seems like a lot of people are talking him up. as a right tackle at the next level.
That all checks out.
Classic.
That's the kind of analysis that you're getting right here.
Listen, guys.
ESPN's Kevin Pelton. That all checks out.
They don't pay me to write about football. All right, moving on into the third day. I went based on the ESPN board's best available of these players. So that puts next up Greg Gaines, defensive tackle.
Greg Gaines. I have been waiting years to know what his arm length is because
quite a concept.
He always struck me as kind of like the Michelin man whenever he would pop up because he was, I don't know, his arms just kind of popped out there. And I don't know. It was personally something I thought about a lot. And he does have 31-inch arms, which is kind of on the small side for a corner, which I found amusing. Overall, though, he actually tested out really well for what he is in terms of a run stuffer. Although it feels like, though, being 6'1 and 308, that is classically a size that's underrated by the NFL. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him go undrafted.
I mean, that'd be great news for the Seahawks if they could snap him up.
Is the type of player that on the Huskies, he just somehow managed to get in the right position occasionally, or really more often than not, where it's like, how did Greg Gaines get there?
I mean, I love Greg Gaines.
Oh, we're gonna miss him big time, but he definitely is sort of built like a T-Rex. The Michelin man is such a good comparison for him.
All right, next up, cornerback Jordan Miller.
Jordan Miller tested out quite a little bit worse. You know, he's down. He's not quite out of the spectrum entirely, but he's at negative 0.8 sigma, so definitely not great. But he did have tremendous arm length. He's at 32, almost 33 inches, and did run a 4.49. So it's interesting with him because his tests are, you know, generally fine. But he tested out very stiff, really poor agility drills, which is probably the thing I look for most in a corner after frame. And I think that does jive probably with people who have watched UW regularly over the last few years. He's not super great at flipping the hips and getting around and, you know, possibly stopping deep go balls down the left sideline.
Yeah. The arm length is kind of Seahawksy, but that the hip mobility is also an important element of their, you know, scheme. So that might make him not a fit for them.
You know, it's interesting though, because Byron Maxwell had horrific agility drills when he came in, and they enrolled him in hot yoga, and he would always say that his hot yoga was like what helped him develop there, because he actually had like really good 40 and vertical and everything and a great frame. But he had just like a 4.5 or something short shuttle, you know, like way, way worse than you should. And they were able to rehabilitate him. So maybe it's that kind of situation, but I don't think hot yoga is probably the magic bullet for every corner.
Every single player. All players can turn into Byron Maxwell into hot yoga.
I'm willing to and sleeves, yeah.
Hot yoga, performance enhancing. Next up, tight end Drew Sample.
Drew Sample tested out in real... Wow, I'm having a tough time now. My boy last year from Montana, the Seahawks drafted. It's so late, I can't remember the name of a Seahawk, which is problematic.
The Thrill?
Yes, Will the Thrill.
The Thrill was gone from your mind.
That's tough stuff. I mean, you tear your patellar tendon.
He didn't play much of the season, so I understand. But when he did play, let me just say, it was thrilling.
I mean, people on Twitter will tell me that he is, like, you know, I believe early in the season there were some takes that he was Kittle level. Now, this is before George Kittle, of course, you know, broke, like, I think, the all-time tight end yardage record. So maybe people were wrong. But, yeah, no, Sample tested out just fine. He's a league average tight end athlete, which is actually a little surprising just having watched him. He's maybe wasn't always the most sudden. And feels incredibly Seahawky in that he's, like, a boring wide tight end who's pretty athletic and can block.
If they hadn't drafted Will Dissly last year, I feel like you could just put it on the board that they were going to draft Drew Sample this year. they made their Drew Sample pick a year early.
Still doesn't rule it out, for the record.
Pete Carroll and Chris Peterson have long dinners, I'm convinced, where they just, like, reminisce about blocking tight ends.
Yes. Oh, boy. All right, next up, running back Miles Gaskin.
Yeah, I mean, Myles Gaskin, obviously we hate running backs, so that's a relevant thing that we always have to consider when we're talking about this. But no, he tested out just fine. I mean, I think he's like 30th percentile, you know, negative half a sigma. Definitely not a great 40 and a little stiff, more than I expected. And it's probably the biggest surprise is he has a pretty slow three cone. But I think we all know he was never a tremendous athlete. Maybe his the best in the form, though. He did weigh in at 200 pounds, right. 198 here, which is pretty good for him. And for me, it does seem like he has a real role as a third down back because he was always just so good at finding space, you know, late in the down and getting out as a receiver. So I think he's pretty interesting there. Doesn't seem like a feature back, though. I mean, honestly, who knows with running backs? I mean, undrafted ones are good all the time. So.
Exactly. We just hate investing resources in running backs. We don't hate running backs.
Yeah, if Myles Gaskin goes undrafted and the Seahawks sign Myles Gaskin, that would be an excellent decision.
Lifelong Myles Gaskin fan.
All right, so then the last player listed in the draftable range would be linebacker Ben Burkhirvan.
Ben Burkhirvan, my man. So here's the thing with Ben Burkhirvan.
I'm looking at his spark score. I see why he's your man.
Wow.
I'm gonna say something else first. Ben Burkhirvan played at the University of Washington for roughly 9 seasons. He is somehow currently 21.6 years old.
Wow.
How is that possible? He has hairs older than 21.6, I guess, until last year when he cut them. I'm just baffled by that. But yeah, I mean, overall, though, he beyond the fact that he weighed in with a 21.6 age, which is a great metric, he was basically right at 6 foot, 230, obviously has a little T-Rex arms, which is nice, but just really athletic. Now, there's not a huge number of players maybe who are that small who are successful, because if I were to run like similarity scores for him, he's pretty athletic. He'd come up almost more as a safety, and we all know he's not a safety, but no, he definitely popped out well. And he, based on that testing, he will get a real look, at least in an NFL camp, if not drafted.
It seems to me like when you combine both the production on the field plus being an okay athlete at the very least, that aside from his height, he feels like somebody who should be drafted, right?
Yeah, no, if you were blind and you took just the athleticism, the profile, and the pedigree, given that he played at Washington, you know, and was one of their better players for several years, you would expect to see them go at least drafted. It really is only a frame issue because it's not just the height. You know, he is also just a smaller person. He has like a 74-inch wingspan, which is better than Byron Murphy, but not tremendous. So given that, people get psyched out pretty easy with size, I think, in general. That's why, you know, a lot of defensive tackles go too late, is because people underrate the fact that actually a lot of small defensive tackles are able to perform. I mean, this is the Puna Ford thing, right? Puna Ford is probably pretty similar to Ben Burkhirvan in a lot of ways. He's pretty productive and good player.
Very similar frames.
All that, but was just undersized. So maybe we'll have, like, you know, a Ben Burkhirvan hive on the Seahawks next year. I don't know.
He's going to crush next year in preseason. This is a complete aside, but going through all of these Husky players, who most of them performed at extremely high levels, like we're talking about all Pac-12 players, a lot of these, the Myles Gaskin being the all-time leader rusher in Husky history, right? Do you think that for Chris Peterson and this staff, this is the type of player that was basically like they were... that was available to them to sign? Like, they're not able to go out, or weren't able to go out 4 years ago when they were recruiting most of these players, to go into the recruiting world and sign freak athletes. But they're so good at coaching that they were able to turn these sort of average athletes into NFL caliber players. Is that a safe assumption?
I don't think that's right. Because, I mean, over the last few years, they've had many great athletes. And in like the junior combine this year, I can't remember names right now because my brain's mostly gone, but there were several players who tested out really well in the junior combine who will be coming out next year. I think this happened to be a class of UW players without elite athletes, but like the past, you know, 2-3 seasons, obviously not all of which were recruited by Chris Peterson, but, you know, Vita Vea was a tremendous athlete. There are players from P- Peterson that have been great. And even going back to his Boise State days, there have been really strong athletes that he recruited there. So I don't think he's not able to recruit athletes. I think it's probably just a one-year anomaly type deal.
Yeah, Dante Pettis.
Yeah.
Hunter Bryant among the underclassmen. I think Miles Bryant did pretty well at the junior combine. And then Kyler Gordon impressed.
Kyler Gordon. I mean, Kevin King. I can't remember if he was recruited by Peterson or not. I think he was.
Okay, well, speaking of UW not having great athletes, what about your favorite quarterback and ours, Jake Browning?
Lifelong Jake Browning fan.
You know, Jake Browning, I'm not sure if you guys read all the articles, but he has a quarterback coach now. And that quarterback coach has taught him how to throw the football, which is exciting.
you know, it did not occur to him in the previous 4 years to learn how to throw a ball.
I love the spin before the draft where it's like this player who's obviously been highly coached as a quarterback for 8 years now is saying how he has a new quarterback coach and knows how to throw the ball. No, I mean, Jake Browning tested out pretty well, actually. I mean, I think it wouldn't surprise anyone to know that he's like kind of average athletically. I think that probably makes sense, right? He's kind of just average at everything.
Yep.
I mean, not to like kill him, but I don't think you could point to any one thing Jake Browning does besides like moxie and say it's tremendous. But it does feel like he could have a good AAF career.
I mean, the leagues that Jake Browning would excel in are quickly folding.
so fast he can't even get drafted into one.
Come on, man. Come on. We should also talk while we're here about Gardner Minshew.
Yes.
Gardner Minshew's, I mean, there's no mustache metric. Seems fine. I don't know. I mean, I actually think Gardner Minshew's pretty interesting, and he could be an interesting backup quarterback. He's just kind of like, again, right in the middle athletically. I don't think teams check as much. It is interesting, just while we're talking about quarterbacks, I guess, the average quarterback athleticism has been going up from year to year. I probably would need to like redo the averages just because quarterbacks are testing much more than they used to. In the sense that quarterbacks used to not even do the drills, but now they're doing them all like at a pretty high level. I don't know. I mean, Gardner Minshew's fine. My biggest complaint with Gardner Minshew is when I scrape data to put all the scores together, he sometimes has the 2 after his name and sometimes does not. And that he's one of the players that forces me to like write much more complex scraping lookups to link him back. And for that, I'm pretty bitter. That's the inside baseball you guys are all looking for, right?
I guess while we're here looking at sort of reading the tea leaves, looking like our NFC West rival, the Arizona Cardinals with the first pick in the draft, saying there's a pretty good chance that they select Kyler Murray with the first overall pick. I see that he didn't really test. Do you have a sense of kind of where he would rank athletically?
I'm pretty sure he did test back when he was in high school. I'd have to look it up. But, I mean, he's really fast. I think people have looked and, you know, seen how fast he is on tape relative to other players that were like running after him or whatever and made comparisons. I have no doubt he's quite an athlete. He also has, you know, like a cannon of an arm and like super talented and like really agile and coordinated. So really a player that we want in the division. It is great though, right? We're going to have like the 2 short good quarterbacks in the division.
Yes. The NFC West will be the official division of undersized but highly productive quarterbacks.
It's also going to be great because Kyler will have like some double digit number and he'll be half the size of Russell, who has the single digit number. So just visually, it's going to be great.
All right. Well, anything else we should discuss leading up to Thursday's NFL draft?
I think I have literally nothing else I know to discuss.
You're very tired, Zach.
it's good. The best work is done in that little bit of delirious stage, I think. So I think this has probably been really productive.
I've still got like 1 hour and 16 minutes of Game of Thrones to watch before I go to bed tonight. So.
Oh, yeah. Just FYI. Do you want to know what happens?
Just real quick.
Let me break it down. So Jake Browning is up with the Umbers.
That's where he's going to be in about 2 years. No,
tough stuff.
I'm sure he'll have a long life as a real estate agent.
You don't think Jake could become a quarterback coach? Jake could be the next Kellen Moore?
Yeah, Kellen Moore is already an offensive coordinator, right? I think Jake Browning is absolutely an offensive coordinator waiting to happen.
You don't think he has Jonathan Smith written all over him?
No, Jake will be. He'll be a good coach somewhere. Also, who's the guy who's like does a radio show, trains with Russell Wilson?
Jake Heaps.
There's a lot of professions for Jakes who play quarterback in Washington State.
I think we just made it to Jake Heaps. So I think that's probably time to call it.
It really is. Really is. on that note, thank you so much for listening, and thank you, Zach, for joining us.
Thank you. Had so much fun.